The NFL draft is happening soon in Detroit, April 25th through the 27th. It's a big deal. The city is expected to increase by at least 300,000 people during this time, as people flock to the city from all over the country. The draft is expected to generate millions of dollars for local businesses. But there are some serious issues to consider during high-volume events like this one, namely human trafficking. Today, we're looking into how law enforcement and advocates are preparing to protect people during this draft and what you should look out for. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Detroit News' Sarah Rahal wrote about the effort and is here to talk to us a little bit more about what she found out. Hey, Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I had heard about this problem around the draft and around Super Bowl games in years past, but there may be some people who weren't really aware that this was even a thing. Why is it that an event like the NFL draft raises concerns about human trafficking?
Well, when you have so many people traveling to an area that is, let's say, like centrally located, it's perfectly located between several highways, international borders, and it's expected to bring in 32 teams nationally for this event. That's kind of why it's a concern. When you have a large gathering of people, especially for a temporary event, certain activities can happen, including crime and things that we have to watch out for because of the influx of people.
So I guess we might say this may not be specific to football culture.
Not at all.
Okay. What does the term human trafficking encompass when we're talking about what could be happening here later this month?
For sure. Human trafficking is when men, women, or children are forced into prostitution, domestic servitude, or other labors for little or no pay. It's a large, growing criminal industry worldwide, including in Michigan. Actually, the advocates that I talked to said that Michigan is one of the worst places for this to happen. They estimate about fifth or sixth worst state nationally, but it's really hard to quantify these numbers of how this is happening because it generally does live in the shadows. And even when we do find situations where victims have been trafficked, the little information that they're able to provide is the only telling tale that we have.
Does Michigan get many reports of human trafficking during an ordinary day or week?
Michigan does. Again, these are very underreported numbers, so we're really relying on national human trafficking hotline databases, which estimated in 2021 that there were about 1,200 hotline tips reported from Michigan, and 500 or so of those tips came directly from victims or survivors of trafficking. When I talked to the Attorney General's office in Michigan, they said that those numbers were on par, but again, they do really, really heavily press that it's very underreported. So they estimate it to be a much bigger problem than we even know.
Sarah, can you say a little bit more of what you learned about what makes Detroit a hub? You mentioned the border and, you know, the roads that come through our area. Is there reason for law enforcement to think that folks would come from over the border for this event who might be trafficking others?
Sure. Trafficking can rely heavily on travel. You know, that doesn't mean that victims are just being picked up in a white van from nearby neighborhoods of Detroit, right? It very much could be victims who are traveling with the person that's keeping them captive or, you know, feeling like they're a part of some work. And this happens typically because victims are, they're made to believe that they're in this space for a specific reason. They're either being, forced to, or they're, you know, typically addicted to substances that their provider gives to them. And I've talked to several advocates that shared their stories of how they got involved in trafficking, and most of them were coerced into it or even blackmailed into it.
Are there preferred locations that human traffickers tend to use during big, splashy events of this kind?
Oh, of course. I mean, hotels are frequently exploited by traffickers because they're perceived as this anonymous and risk-free locations. There's also heightened awareness at the travel spots that I mentioned, like airports, train stations, massage parlors, even like especially online platforms. When I talked to the Attorney General's office, they said a lot of their work was focused on the online platforms this year, and has been for a couple of years. But particularly for this event, they're monitoring online advertisements and harassment that could come into children's and teenagers' phones and online, even through video games, of where these chat spaces people are meeting and coercing them to leave their homes to be trafficked. That's even way more dangerous than what we had previously conceptualized as an image of human trafficking, right? Because we always had this stereotypical image of what prostitution looks like, and frankly, it's really not even happening in front of our eyes most of the time, and that's the biggest concern.
Sarah, for just a moment, can we talk a little bit more about why this is a big problem? I mean, there's no question that there are many people who perform sex work who are coerced. They don't have control of their lives. They don't have control of their bodies. And I heard what you said earlier about coercion and addiction and the roles that they play in victimizing people. But you can find folks who say that sex work is a choice and that they'd like to see it legalized to make it safer. What did advocates say about the harm to people's lives who either do want out of the life or who maybe they wouldn't say that they want out, but they're being really controlled by other folks?
I think that one of the reasons why Michigan is one of these places that is high up in the charts is because we do have a metropolis that is, like we mentioned, centrally located, but the crime rate has also been quite high in this metropolis, right? So it kind of leans on there's so much crime. Here's something that's happening secretively that's even harder to track, harder to quantify, and the victims are less likely to come forward because they're in a controlled situation. They're typically fearful for advocating for help or even don't want help sometimes because they've gotten used to the situations that they're in. The advocates I talked to had been trafficked for upwards of 15 to 20 years and had been doing so since they were a young kid. And they kind of get attached to the life that they've grown to live in. It's even a situation where, in many cases, they advocate that the system doesn't really help them.
We need to take a break. More in a minute.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
There are some states in which fines and criminal charges are reserved for human traffickers, but there are places where the actual people being trafficked themselves are subject to penalties. Is that the case in Michigan?
That is the case. And so there's this fear of also coming forward and fearing that they're also going to be prosecuted for sex work. And so in Michigan, a first offense of prostitution or solicitation is a misdemeanor crime. It's punishable by up to 93 days in jail. A fine should not exceed $500. That's very, very low, and it's not really much of a deterrent for people who are being trafficked or people who are soliciting other people to be trafficked. So it actually breeds a situation where people feel like they can commit these crimes. And you actually have places that are in Michigan, like Washtenaw County, that prosecutor back in 2021 decriminalized sex work and said that they were not going after the prostitutes themselves, but wanted to go after Joe Schmo, who is pimping them out. And there's a lot of advocates who disagree with that method, saying the only way you're going to get to Joe Schmo is by finding the victims themselves. This is a kind of fear where there's less, laws that protect against sex work, there's a bigger chance that this will happen.
Right. Your article talked about some red flags, suspicious things that people might keep an eye out for. Can you share a little bit about what those look like?
Yeah, when I talked to the FBI, you know, they really put a heavy hand on this online situation as well. You know, if your son or daughter's has a sudden change in behavior or is more withdrawn or gone from home, it's kind of obvious, but also like an unexplained amount of money. Their physical attire has changed suddenly, or if they start hanging out with older people is a common sign that they look for. But they've also seen some really physical indications like brandings or tattoos or even piercings that have some symbol or indication of a trafficker's name. And that's very, very obvious symbols. But for the training that the FBI and other authorities put on for Detroit workers, including hospitality workers, indicated things that were more, they sound very common, but in the circumstance that we're talking about, they could be red flags, like guests that are checking in without luggage when traveling, or signs that they look tired or malnourished or fearful, especially to make eye contact with other people, including the person that they're with. There's also, you know, people who are just not dressed appropriately for the weather. That's a really big red flag for an indication that they aren't supposed to be there. An individual who's controlling reservations for a large group or asking for rooms that are near an exit of the hotel and maybe even denying housekeeping services, but asking for an increased number of towels for the room that really doesn't correlate with the number of people staying. All of these can be kind of combined into a situation where you may think that something is going on. I think a lot of the advocates are really watching movement. They're watching for people who maybe leave an area for a certain time with a certain individual and then maybe come back alone. That's an indicator for them that, you know, if they're stationed in one spot, maybe they're actually not there for the event itself.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the fact that so much trafficking is facilitated through the internet today. I wondered if the law enforcement folks that you talked to felt like there are things they can do to crack down. I mean, it kind of feels like the things that police have to do when they're trying to enforce fireworks laws on the 4th of July. I mean, they can drive around looking for people who look like they're involved, but is there a way to be systematic about this?
Really, we just have to understand that our police over time is going to be overwhelmed for something like this. And we are tapping other cities and other states to like nearby to help in bringing canine units and bringing so many authorities to assist in this situation. You know, I even talked to the Detroit police who said there is not a single officer that is allowed to have time off during this weekend. They are relying heavily on educational and advocacy groups to assist, especially in things like online solicitation. So I talked to Lori Cohen, who's the CEO of PACT. It's an education and advocacy group. And that group has been working with researchers who are scraping social media posts to monitor for advertisements of sexual services. And from there, they can start soliciting online and actually catch the perpetrators themselves in real time. That's just one of the examples of how they're trying to combat the online platforms.
Sure. What kind of help is available for people who are who have been trafficked and are trying to get out of that life?
There's the National Human Trafficking Tip Hotline, which we mentioned, which is 888-373-7888. Intake calls are typically relate to the local authorities and the Michigan Attorney General's office, and they can be anonymous as well. There's also advocates who say that they're traveling to Detroit for this event to keep an eye out and actually intervene when the situation arises. They don't recommend that every day people like April and I to intervene when we see something because it can be particularly dangerous. The traffickers themselves, this is their way of income. And so they can be very protective and even dangerous should that indication arise. So there's these advocates like Leslie King and the Soap Project and also some others that are coming from even Grand Rapids who have their own centers where they help rehabilitate these women that are coming to interject themselves should they notice the situation. When I talked to them, they said they're not coming for the fun of it all, but they're coming for work and they hope to rescue some of these women. And even if they didn't want their help right then in that moment, they'll have cards that they can reach out to when they feel comfortable for help.
Right. I assume that they're hoping that if people do observe something they think is suspicious, that they'd contact police.
Yes, absolutely. Contact police. 911 would be the best situation. And so many of us feel like if we notice something that maybe we don't want to call because maybe it's not that situation and we don't want to be wrong about it. But the advocates that I talk to begged and pleaded for the public to report anything that they found suspicious, because in those situations, one call may save that person's life. And if it's not that situation, that's okay too. It's probably worth asking, because we do know that it's going to be a spike during this event.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, in your reporting, you talked to Leslie King, who's an advocate and a survivor of human trafficking herself. And King talked about how at the draft, she's going to be looking for men walking around with women and children and keeping an eye out for how they move and how they're dressed. I mean, it's crazy to think that trafficking might be that blatant, you know, with traffickers just walking around with the people they're victimizing.
That's one of the things that she mentioned happens most often. And because there's so many people, it's almost unnoticeable because it's right in front of our faces, right? And she said a big indicator of that is, again, not being able to look their pimp in the eye and not being dressed appropriately, or even not being so close to them, but at the same time having communication where they're standing over them to speak to them. Or telling them, pointing where to go and who to talk to. That to me is, it seems like any of us would have noticed, but realistically, so many people in such a crowded space, when I talk to authorities, we don't have a capacity number yet for what the NFL footprint will hold. But we know that so many more people, even 2 to 3 times that number, will be in the outskirts of that NFL downtown footprint, in Greektown, in the parks that are hosting watch parties, and even in, you know, reaching into the midtown and somewhat into the suburbs. I think one thing that this story opened our eyes to was just to take a step back, look at our surroundings, keep in mind everyone else's safety, and on top of having a good time.
Sarah Rahal is a reporter with the Detroit News. You can read her story about the NFL draft and trafficking at the news website. Sarah, thank you so much.
April, thank you for having me and for shedding light on this issue.
If you or someone you know needs help, call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. The hotline's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and services are offered in English and in Spanish. That's the Stateside podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganpublic.org. Today's pod was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cabansag, April Van Buren, and our director, Mercedes Mejia. Our intern is Olivia Meradian, and our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and also from Audio Network. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.